Here we go. We're time to take you home on a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush. Welcome to it. White Sox winners. They have clinched the American League Central. 7 innings of baseball, 3 hours of time. And here we go now with our 2-hour edition of the Sports Rush up to 6 o'clock. And then Justin Kenny will take over with the High School Football Coaches Show. That will be from 6 until 7. And then later on tonight, we've got more White Sox baseball. And after the White Sox take on the Indians in Game 2 of the doubleheader, we've got the Panthers and Texans, your Thursday night football game, which will be joined in progress right after White Sox baseball Game 2 against the Indians, which is another 7-inning game coming up tomorrow. High school football takes over the radio dial. Our 7 hours of high school football coverage gets started with the Sports Rush tomorrow from 4 to 6, and then at 6 o'clock, the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate Pregame Show. Jim, Shannon, and Doot ready to give you previews of all the area games, including the game that we will be at to broadcast, the East Noble Knights and the Norwell Knights, live from Norwell. Of course, join us for our tailgate pregame show. Hopefully all the Norwell and East Noble fans get there early, hang out with us before kickoff, and then tune in for all the play-by-play action. Of course, the night will wrap up with the Indiana Physical Therapy postgame show live from the Wayndale Pizza Hut. We'll be out there until 11 o'clock with your scores, highlights, coaches, interviews, and a whole lot more. Big day coming tomorrow to wrap up your Friday evening and get you into your sports weekend. Coming up on the show today, a couple of big guests, including, and when I say big, I really mean big for this guy, Trey Essex, former Harding Hawk. Back in the day, he was an outstanding tight end for Harding. Eventually went on to Northwestern, where he became an offensive lineman. Got into the NFL with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Trey Essex will join us. Talk about the Indianapolis Colts. He actually was at the Colts-Rams game this past weekend. So we'll talk to Trey Essex. Find out a little bit about the chemistry of an offensive line. Because Trey Essex was part of offensive lines that had some injuries where you had to plug in new guys. So I just want to get an idea of how much of an impact that is on an offensive line when you don't get the reps of working together. How difficult is it at the NFL level? We'll find out. Trey Essex at 4:35. And then in our next hour, I've got our high school football picks of the week. Always excites me on Thursdays because I get to announce who I think will win, who I think will lose, and what the final scores will be with our high school football picks of the week presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic. That comes up at 5:08, and then at 5:35, Tommy Schegler will give us his picks, Parkview Sports Medicine Director. He'll tell us what he's expecting to see out of high school football this weekend. And, of course, you're connected, as always, on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862, 46862. Any questions, comments, suggestions? Hey, we've still got prizes to give away today, too. I think we've still got tickets. So 2 more tickets to go see Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo live at the Hobart Arena in Troy, Ohio, coming up 1 week from tonight. We've got 2 more tickets we will give away sometime during today's show. I want to have hope in the Indianapolis Colts. I want to believe they can get this season turned around, and then an 0-2 start, pretty much what we expected before the season began. We knew it was going to be a struggle through the first 5 games. We talked about it all during the offseason when the NFL released the schedule that the Colts were going to struggle early. You have Seattle and the Rams. You get them both at home, but those are 2 good football teams and 2 good quarterbacks. Then you go into the next 3-game stretch. It's all on the road, which, number one, doesn't make it any easier. And then, number two, you've got a divisional opponent that you expect to compete with for an AFC South title. Then you've got a team that's an upstart that's trying to earn their way into a playoff position. And you finalize that first 5-game stretch with a quarterback that's probably one of the most difficult to defend. It doesn't mean he's the most talented, but he might be the most difficult to defend in Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. That's the 5-game stretch the Colts are in. I tried to find out history of what the Colts have done when they've been 0-2. I'm going to say, let's go back to 2014. We'll kind of skip 2015. That didn't turn out so well, but 2014... The Colts started 0-2. They were coming off an 11-5 season the season before. and lost their first two games, and defensively did not look good in doing so. Gave up 31 points and 30 points in the first two games to the Broncos and to Philadelphia. They were 0-2, looked like the defense was extremely porous. And then the defense stepped up in the next three games. The defense really was the difference, as the Colts allowed just 17, 17, and 13 points. Why do I bring this up? Because it's what I expect the Colts are going to need to do if they're going to turn around this 0-2 start. They're going to have to do it with their defense. Defense is going to have to come up big against Tennessee. And that's a challenge, because you've got Derrick Henry, who is a load to try to bring down. Just ask Julian Blackmon. He had a great press conference yesterday where he talked about the challenge of tackling Derrick Henry and about the stiff arm. And he said, man, that dude is strong. He says, but the only thing is, if you let him beat you with the stiff arm and you miss the tackle, you end up being a highlight on SportsCenter. And you don't want to be that end of the highlight, because it would be a Derrick Henry highlight if he pushes you off with the stiff arm. He says, it's your job. You have to figure out a way to take him down. No excuses. You have to tackle him. I thought he was great when they talked to Julian Blackmon yesterday after the Colts practice. But it's going to be the defense that probably is going to have to keep Colts in games, because right now it's still not looking good for Carson Wentz. He did not practice today. Swelling apparently is an issue right now in the ankles. According to another report I saw on Twitter, he's got a high ankle sprain in the right ankle, low ankle sprain in the left ankle. Generally, guys don't bounce back quickly from high ankle sprains. So I just think it would be a miracle if he's able to go. Colts are still not saying or confirming that he's not going to play on Sunday, but at practice today, here's what's interesting. It was not Jacob Eason taking the first team reps. Yesterday, most of the first team reps went to Brett Hundley. Today, split between Hundley and Eason, but I think Hundley still had the majority of first team snaps. What is that telling us? Well, it means that the Colts are not real comfortable turning things over to Carson Wentz to start this game, so they might go with a guy that has a little bit of experience. How many starts does Brett Hundley have? Do you know, Caleb?
Nine. It's actually in my sports update. That's why I know.
Oh, okay. That was very good. Very quick with the answer.
All in 2017 for the Green Bay Packers.
But now, see, Brett Hundley might be the difference.
Came from UCLA. And that's about all I can tell you about him.
That's about all you can tell us about Brett Hundley. Career stats? We can pull up the career stats. We'll get you the full breakdown on Brett Hundley. But it looks like the Colts are leaning that way, to go with Brett Hundley as opposed to Jacob Eason. So I don't feel good either way. I'm certainly not excited about Hundley. I think Wentz or Eason probably has more raw talent. Big arm, big quarterback, has been through camp running the first team for at least 50% of the time. Of course, he and Ellinger were kind of splitting time during camp. So I feel like Eason has more experience with this particular group, but that was a pretty ugly throw he threw when he came in. But I mean, that's a tough position for any rookie to be in, to all of a sudden say, you're in your 2-minute offense. We got to get down the field. We must score. We're behind, and, almost no warm-up. Go out there and do your best. I think they could have made it easier for him. A lot of times in those situations, you call like a screen play or something just to get a short completion, to get the quarterback kind of warmed up and loosened into the game. Colts immediately went downfield, and Eason threw the pick. Colts then gave up the ball to the Rams, who ran out the clock, and the Colts end up losing to the Los Angeles Rams 27-24. So 0-2, they've got to get it turned around, and this is a big game. And now, again, it's not necessarily must win just because of 0-3, because there'd still be 14 games left, and the season would not be over. But You have to consider that the head-to-head meeting with Tennessee is going to be key at some point, whether you're talking about the AFC South tiebreaker, whether you're talking, and it would be really tough to even get tied with Tennessee, because they'd be two games back if they lose this game coming up Sunday. They still would have a game head-to-head against Tennessee where they could make up one of those games, but they'd have to have some help along the way. But if you look at why this game is so important for the Colts, it's not because of the 0-3 record. Because, again, If we thought they were going to be 2-3 after five games, if they lose the first three and win the next two, that's fine. And most of us thought that the Colts were probably going to be a 2-3 team after five games in. And I think now with Miami not having Tua going to Jacoby Brissett, you would think that would be an advantage to the Colts, although I never like having to face a former quarterback that you ended up dumping off the roster, because you know that Jacoby Brissett would be pretty motivated to go against the Colts, and he's very familiar with the Colts defense. It's kind of like what I see with Jack Cohn this week for Notre Dame. He's going to be going against the team that opted to go with someone else, and so he left, went to Notre Dame, and I'm sure Jack Cohn would love nothing more than to stick it to Wisconsin coming up this Saturday. But that's the position that the Colts might be in, depending on how Tua progresses from the fractured ribs. I don't even know what a timeline is for fractured ribs. Can you play with fractured ribs if you can endure the pain and just put on the extra padding around your rib cage?
Yeah, I mean, that's something. It just depends on your pain level, and it could be a month. It could be just a couple of weeks. You could play through it. I mean, guys,
they've ruled
him
out for this week. We know Tua's not playing this week.
Drew Brees played through it last season at points.
He was out, though, for what, 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah. I mean, he had other injuries besides that. To clarify, cracked ribs or fractured ribs?
The term that was used was fractured.
Okay. I'm not sure what the difference is.
Dr. Hatch, what are you getting at?
I'm not a doctor. One of my older brothers actually is a doctor, but I could not explain the difference.
I mean, you've got a cracked rib, a fractured rib, and a broken rib, probably, right? Are those the different terms? All I know is that as soon as they determined it was fractured and not just bruised, that's when they immediately ruled him out for the following game, which I would imagine... there's a certain timeline that if you get a direct hit, it could probably be more dangerous as far as, you know, breaking a rib or puncturing a lung. I don't know how long it takes ribs to recover, but Tua is out this week. And then the very next week is when the Colts go down to Miami to take on the Dolphins. And that's when the question is going to be, will Tua play against the Colts or will it be Jacoby Brissett, who landed in Miami after the Colts decided to move on from Brissett and not re-sign him? 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Found this interesting, too. Did you see the press conference with Carson Wentz speaking to the media, Caleb, yesterday after practice?
I have not watched back the video of that.
He got on the podium, spoke to the media. He was not wearing a mask. Now, I thought NFL protocol was that the players had to have a mask when they met with the media if they were not vaccinated. I don't know if that's changed, but I was thinking every time I've seen one of the Colts that's been publicized as not being vaccinated, they generally had a mask on during preseason camp. And so I don't know if it's changed. I don't know if the protocol is different, but I did find it interesting that Carson Wentz did come to the podium and speak to the media and did not have a mask on, which means, okay, did he get the vaccine? Is he vaccinated now? Maybe he's got one dose, two doses. I don't know, but he did not wear a mask for his press conference yesterday. Here's the other thing that I heard last couple of days. Matt Stafford was almost an Indianapolis Colt. Apparently, Chris Ballard targeted Matt Stafford as his first choice prior to getting a deal done with Philadelphia to get Carson Wentz. Now, this according to Kelly Stafford, Matt Stafford's wife, who spoke to the media and said that they were almost sure that it was going to be Indianapolis. And in fact, they were so convinced that Indianapolis was a strong potential landing spot that she said her and Matt were going through Zillow looking at homes and properties in the Indianapolis area before things ended up being finalized with the Rams. And the Rams had the one asset the Indianapolis Colts couldn't offer in the trade, and that was an established quarterback. And so, because, I mean, the Colts had Rivers retiring and Brissett at the end of his contract, so there wasn't an established quarterback in Indy for them to make any kind of move with. Rams were willing to give up Goff. Lions liked getting Goff plus the picks, and so that's how the Lions ended up making the deal with the Rams. But I guess, would it be any different in Indianapolis right now? I mean, maybe the fact that Stafford wouldn't have played for the Rams on Sunday, would have played for the Colts, maybe that would have been better. But Would it be any different? Would the situation be any different for the Colts if Stafford was the quarterback at this point? Would it be? I can't imagine it'd be any better than 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, they'd at least be 1-1, if not 2-0. But obviously, there was no way that trade was ever going to work out because, again, the Colts didn't have a quarterback as an asset to trade.
And I guess if the Rams had decided they were locked in with Goff, that they felt like Goff was going to be a good enough choice for them and that they wanted to keep the youth over the experience of Stafford, that would be the only choice, whether the Rams decided not to give up Goff. But clearly they did. That's done. That's over. But Stafford apparently was in discussions to become an Indianapolis Colt. Also, Colts had 5 of the 122 Hall of Fame candidates that were announced for 2022. And among the list, Robert Mathis for the first time. Reggie Wayne back on the list. Jeff Saturday, Dallas Clark, Bob Sanders. I don't think Dallas Clark and Bob Sanders are Hall of Famers. I don't think Bob Sanders' career was long enough. Of course, it was riddled with injuries. And I tell you what, if you just take a per-game Bob Sanders, he was a disruptor. I mean, the guy played with reckless abandon, and you got to love the way he gave 100% when he was out there, but certainly not a Hall of Fame-worthy career. Dallas Clark, effective, solid, but I don't think Hall of Fame career would apply to Dallas Clark. But I think the other three should all get in. I would say yes on Mathis, yes on Wayne, yes on Saturday. Whether they all get in the same class or whether it takes a series of years, because we've already seen Edgerrin and Peyton, Marvin Harrison, and so a number of the Colts. But I don't know, Caleb. I think Mathis, Wayne, and Saturday are guys that had careers worthy of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I could see all three eventually getting in. I think Reggie Wayne could get in as early as next year. The other two are going to have to wait probably a few years.
And so 46862, what do you think about the Colts and who deserves to be in the Hall? Who doesn't? Let us know, 46862, 46862. Time flying by. Still coming up this show in this hour, Trey Essex, former Harding Hawk, Northwestern Wildcat, and Pittsburgh Steeler. He's going to join us to talk about the situation with Indianapolis Colts and, in particular, the offensive line, because it's been nothing short of disappointing so far for the Colts. And we'll talk to Trey Essex about it, what he saw in the game on Sunday. Coming up in our next hour, stay tuned for it. We've got another edition of the High School Football Picks of the Week, presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic. That comes up at 5:08. And Tommy Schegler will give us his selections to win this weekend when he joins us at 5:35. All the way till 6 o'clock, we roll with the sports rush. And you know what this weekend is going to determine? If it's basketball season in Indiana, because football season could be coming to a short conclusion where you've got the Colts going down to Tennessee. I'm not going to say the season is over if they lose, but certainly it's not a good feeling to start the season 0-3. But you've got Indiana to Western Kentucky. I'm not counting Indiana as a lock to win that game. And if they lose it, you look at the next five games, it could very quickly be what, 2-7 or no, I'm sorry, be 1-8 for the Indiana Hoosiers, because this is to keep them 2-2 if they get a win against Western Kentucky. So things at stake for Indiana, where basketball might be king again if the Hoosiers don't go down to Bowling Green and get a win against the Hilltoppers. Meanwhile, Purdue is hosting Illinois, and it's going to be a tough year for the Boilermakers if they don't win this one, because Illinois, Nebraska, you've got to think that is Nebraska the worst team in the Big Ten? Rutgers? I don't think Rutgers is. I think Rutgers is respectable now under Schiano.
Yeah, Rutgers is actually 3-0 going into the game against Michigan Saturday. I would say Northwestern, Illinois, Nebraska, I mean, they were actually competitive against Oklahoma, so I'd take them off that for now. But Illinois and Nebraska, or Nebraska.
Northwestern? You
Northwestern? Oh, they're very bad.
Just bad this year.
Yeah.
Just caught in the cycle. Of course, Michigan State was really bad last year, and look at them now. They're pretty respectable. Had a pretty impressive win over the U, Miami, over the weekend. But, it could be a long season for Purdue if they can't get the job done against Illinois. Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Things could go downhill in a hurry for the Fighting Irish if some of the things we've been questioning get exposed by Wisconsin. That is the offensive line for Notre Dame. If Notre Dame can't establish the run, how will the passing game respond with Jack Cohn? We'll see how Notre Dame does against Wisconsin. Colts, as we mentioned, at Tennessee. And then even to try to hold on to the Bears, who at least are 1-1 through 2 weeks, it could get ugly at Cleveland. But the Bears could surprise us. Maybe Justin Fields has the game of his life going back to the state of Ohio, getting the start against the Cleveland Browns. Bears are being bolstered by the return of a couple of defensive linemen. I don't know. Is that one of the upsets? I've got a list of games this weekend where you almost immediately react and think no chance for one of the teams versus the other. But I want to go down and actually look at each game and say, okay, which one of these would be the greatest potential for an upset? Who would be on upset alert if we said not all these teams are going to win? Because the chances are in the NFL, you take a list of 7 or 8 games, the chances are, even if it looks like it's very one-sided, somebody is going to pull a surprise. I mean, it is so hard to get 16 for 16 on picks because there's always a game that just gets ridiculous. So we'll go through, talk about some of those games coming up a little bit later in the show. Also, Ben Simmons says he has no plans to play for Philadelphia and has told the Sixers he's not going to be reporting to camp. He wants to be traded. Should the Pacers show interest in Ben Simmons?
I also have no plans to play for Philadelphia and would love to be traded to the Pacers. And I also don't plan on reporting for camp.
But, yeah, but you know, there's a difference, Caleb. There is a difference. You can actually shoot a 3. Occasionally. You might.
That's
let me
true.
Say this.
That's
you could,
true.
If the bar is set by Ben Simmons, I think you might be one step above it. Let's just put it that way. And as am I, we might both be able to hit more threes than Ben Simmons. So you would not be in favor of the Pacers looking at Ben Simmons as an option.
You know, I'd actually be interested because the Pacers by this consistent, oh, we're going to run it back again, you know, with the same roster, the same lineup, a few minor tweaks. It hasn't worked. Because of injuries, eventually you have to make a decision between Turner and Sabonis. It's getting to the point with TJ Warren where his health has become such an issue that you question if there are more problems with injuries this upcoming season. You know, do you get rid of him? Malcolm Brogdon, there are questions on his leadership, and you know, he might be I don't know if cancer is the right word in the locker room, but
it
might be a problem.
Opportunity to dangle Malcolm Brogdon out there a little bit if you can get Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Because Ben Simmons could take over the point, and that would make Malcolm Brogdon expendable. In fact, Malcolm Brogdon might be part of the trade if you make a deal with Philadelphia. I mean, who are you going to trade? Brogdon and I can't imagine you trade Turner because I mean, what's – Philadelphia is between a rock and a hard place right now. It's a difficult situation to be in because there isn't a lot of leverage with teams. It's not like teams go out and scramble to try to pick up an extra player just as they're going into camp. Most of them have already spent the offseason with the draft and with free agent signings. Most of them have put their roster together, and most of them are probably happy with where they're at and don't want to overhaul it before they even see how this recipe plays out. So it's a difficult position for Philadelphia. I think you don't have to give a whole lot if Philadelphia is anxious to make a move. Now, if Philadelphia wants to sit on Ben Simmons and Ben Simmons doesn't report and he doesn't play, it could get ugly for a while. But I know what you're saying is that the Pacers can't. What is that?
Status quo.
The old law, huh?
They're sticking to the status quo.
Yeah, but it's the old law that when you do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. Yeah. And
insanity.
It's kind of the same. That's kind of the story with the Pacers. It's like eventually it's insanity. And the Pacers just stick with this group claiming it's injuries. It's coaching. They give all these excuses as to why this group hasn't had a chance to succeed. And I'm just not sure this group ever will.
Well, the real issue, I think, is upper management above the players and the coaches. I mean, it's the guys putting the roster together.
You're calling out Kevin Pritchard.
Yes, and the people signing the checks. I mean, the ownership, they have to truly be willing to spend big money if they want to attract key free agents. And I get that Indianapolis is not a destination, and Indiana as a whole is not a destination compared to Miami and L.A. and
I don't think you
Boston.
Can get them through free agency. I don't think the dollar is going to overpower the geography. I don't think players even, because the thing is, unless you're the only bidder, then maybe you can get a guy to come in as a free agent at top dollar. But you'd have to be the only bidder, because as soon as somebody from New York, Boston, Miami, either of the L.A. teams, any of those teams decide they want to play and they want to make an offer, Indiana falls way down the list. And then there's also other teams from the Midwest. Milwaukee would probably be a more appealing destination, because it's also who does that superstar get to play with, and what are the percentages and the odds of them playing for a championship? Because that's the other factor. If you're bidding on a player, you got to have the chance to win a championship. I don't know if the NBA players today consider Indiana to be a real viable championship contender.
No.
Well, they did 15, 20 years ago. I mean, there was a time, because the Pacers had come off a decade of being one of the best teams in the East, always competing at the highest level. But now it's been 15 years or so. So when you're talking about guys that are in their 20s, they probably don't even remember the Pacers being relevant with Reggie and company.
Well, they wouldn't remember that, but they would remember 2014 with David West and Paul George and George Hill and all those guys, Roy Hibbert. I mean, that was the last time they were truly relevant as far as within the conference and the league.
David West may have been the key to that, because David West sacrificed a lot to play at Indiana.
He is the highest free agent signing, I mean, they have ever made. If that shows you how aggressive the Pacers have been in free agency.
David West.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. We're going to have Trey Essex joining us on the other side, former Fort Wayne Harding product who went on to Northwestern and eventually to the Steelers, played in the NFL, offensive lineman. We're going to talk about the Colts offensive line and their issues with Trey Essex. A lot of it we've talked about. How big of an impact is chemistry with this offensive line? And we're going to ask a guy who's actually been there in the trenches. Trey Essex joins us next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Mastodons will start basketball practice next week. Yes, it is really college basketball season, as the Dons will start in early November. They'll have the first couple of games at home before heading to Minnesota to take on the Golden Gophers. But practice for both the men's and women's programs will start next week. We want to talk Indianapolis Colts football and the NFL. Nobody better to do it than one of our own from the 260 to the show, you could say, Trey Essex, who started at Harding High School, eventually went on to Northwestern, where he starred for the Wildcats and ended up being a Pittsburgh Steeler. But let's talk about where the Colts are at right now as far as this offensive line. Trey joins us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Good afternoon, Trey.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on, folks.
Hey, it's a thrill to talk to you. And as somebody that's been there and done it, we thought, okay, you would be able to give us a good perspective on the offensive line, because we feel like it's been a disappointment so far. There's been a lot of changes and some faces that we didn't expect to be in starting spots. You had a chance to observe them Sunday, because I saw the picture of you and Ben Skowronek. What are you seeing as far as some of the issues with the Colts offensive line through the first couple of weeks?
Like you said, there's been so many moving pieces without having a firm position, a stability at left tackle. And then Braden Smith getting hurt, not playing this past week. That's what it is, it's chemistry. You would think the way that they ended the last couple of years with how strong they were running the ball with Jonathan Taylor, that those things would not creep into the beginning of this season, that they would start a little bit faster. But obviously, it's going to take some getting used to not having a left tackle, which is a major part of your offensive line, any offensive line. But hopefully, now that Fisher's back and he's got a game under his belt after hurting his Achilles last year, they can form some chemistry moving forward and get the thing rolling in the right direction.
How amazing is it that you see Fisher out there just 8 months or so after the torn Achilles?
It's amazing. A guy that big, us big guys with lower extremity issues, you don't recover that fast, if at all. And Achilles is the new ACL. Back in when I played, the ACL used to take you a year, sometimes more, to get to recover from. And now the Achilles can almost be a career ender. You're never quite the same when you come back. But to see a big guy who's been in the league as long as he has been to hit rehab as hard as he did and recover as fast as he did and come back and start left tackle in the National Football League, it's just a testament to his hard work and dedication to that rehab process, because that's amazing.
We hear a lot about chemistry. You just mentioned it with the offensive line and the fact that the Colts have never really had a lot of practices with the five guys that get sent out there on Sunday because everybody's rotating into positions. You've been part of stepping in to offensive lines. When we talk chemistry, is it the communication as far as knowing the assignments, recognizing the defense, knowing who you're supposed to block? What do you actually identify as chemistry with the offensive line?
It's all of the above, and what it really boils down to is just having a feel for the guy next to you and his timing. You know when that guy is going to move. You know how quick that guy is going to get off the line of scrimmage. You know what he's going to do when a defensive line twists. You know what he's going to do when a linebacker shoots the gap. It's just those little things, those little intricacies of playing offensive line that you can only pick up after playing next to somebody for a long amount of time. Not to mention, you got a new quarterback in there, so his cadence is different. And if you haven't been in there like Eric Fisher, you can watch from the sideline as much as you want to and try to pick up on the cadence. But the cadence is one of the biggest tools for offensive linemen, because you know you get that split second get off the ball a little bit sooner than a defensive lineman. And that takes some getting used to, and that takes reps. And with Wentz being back there and not being back there during the last few weeks of training camp and then coming back the first 2 weeks of the season and Eric Fisher finally coming in, that's just going to take some time to get used to. And reps, you can't trade anything for repetition. And those are the little things that you got to pay attention to, and that's how chemistry builds, when you have time to get used to those little things and time you're going to feel the person next to you.
What's some of the tricks of the trade in pass blocking in the NFL? What are some of the things? Because I noticed a couple of times that it looks like Julian Davenport, who's been in there as one of the backup tackles, who's gotten significant playing time here through the first couple of games. But I tell you, when you get on your heels or when you get too tall, it just looks like you're done. What were some of the things that you were taught as far as offensive line play? There are things you have to avoid to be effective, especially in pass blocking.
That's the thing. You got to stay off your heels. And one of the things that guys that are backups and young guys who are coming in and not, I guess, used to playing the position, they get so robotic with their movements. They want to set perfect every single time. And you can't. There's no perfect set in the NFL. And one of the things that I like to tell young guys when I'm talking to offensive linemen is that offensive linemen have moves too. You talk about a defensive lineman has the stiff arm, the bull rush, the speed rush, the spin move. You know, offensive linemen have one-handed punch, two-handed punch, quick set, vertical set, all these things that you can mix into a pass set that can throw off the timing of a defensive lineman. And when you are a guy that's just thrown in there, you get real robotic and you start doing the same thing over and over again, trying to be perfect with your set, and the defensive lineman gets a beat on that, and they start using it to their advantage. And that's the biggest problem that guys who get thrown into the mix at the last minute or backups have an issue with is learning to be comfortable using your moves as an offensive lineman as well to counteract the defensive lineman's moves.
Talking to Trey Essex, former Harding Hawk, Northwestern Wildcat, Pittsburgh Steeler, career in the NFL, joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. What have you thought about Carson Wentz and what you saw from him in the first couple of games?
I've been pleasantly surprised. I mean, obviously he knows his offense. He knows the terminology. But coming off the year he had last year, you would think that he might have been a little gun-shy with trying to fit some balls in there. When he would take off, run the ball, one of his biggest assets, what made him so successful early in his career in Philly was the ability to extend plays and take off the ball when take off with the ball when needed. And he looks like that guy from two or three years ago before he started having the struggles in Philly. You could tell that there were some confidence issues that he had in Philly. He looks like a very confident quarterback playing the position right now. There have been some protection issues, and I know how confidence can start to lack when you start getting hit after a while, but he doesn't seem to be doing that. He seems his ankle seems or his foot, whatever issue he was dealing with in training camp, looks to be fine. He had a couple of good scrambles in that Rams game this past weekend, and I've been pleasantly surprised. I think as he gets used to the guys, he gets used to throwing to Pittman, you get T.Y. back in the mix, Campbell back in the mix, and I think you're really starting to see him really do well in his offense.
Bruce, you spent most of your career with the Pittsburgh Steelers. At this point, and fortunately, Trey, I'll set this up by just saying we have no one from Pittsburgh that listens to this program. We're actually blocked in Pittsburgh. So you can be completely honest when we ask you a question about the Steelers.
Big Ben. Steelers Nation is everywhere.
Big Ben, he's like, I think he's older than you are. And you've been out of the league for a few years. He's still out there slinging it for Pittsburgh. But there comes a time, and I think it's the most difficult thing for a professional athlete, is to determine when is the right time to step away. At this point in Pittsburgh, with having to pay Big Ben, the production you're getting, has he crossed a line to where he's almost becoming more of a liability than an asset?
No, completely not. And this is not me being a homer, maybe, a little bit. He is my quarterback. That's my quarterback. But I could be honest in saying that Ben has shown me enough where he still has what it takes to win games for the Steelers. And the biggest thing that they're having issues with is their offensive lineman as well. Their offensive line is young. They don't have one single starter, the right tackle who started as left tackle in training camp, moved to right tackle before week one. It's the only guy that's playing the same position that he played last year. Everybody else on the offensive line is new. And so, and they have a new offensive line coach and a new offensive coordinator. So when I talked about chemistry, they have a lot of issues to work in order to get that good chemistry going. And unfortunately, Ben has to play behind that and play through that. And you're starting to see some of the things that maybe he can't do as well. Now, he still has a big arm, and the timing is a little bit off because he has to get rid of the ball a lot faster. So you're not seeing the explosive plays, and you're not seeing the best that we can get from the first-round draft pick and Najee Harris, but also another rookie in the offense. It's going to take a while for that offense to get going. So, of course, when the offense is not performing to the expectations of Steeler Nation, which is a very spoiled group, but I love them to death, they tend to harp on the shortcomings of the quarterback. And Ben just can't be his best when he doesn't have the best around him.
Dre, who do you like for the Super Bowl? I already made my pick. I got the Rams in Buffalo. You had a chance to see the Rams. Am I on to something, or have I made a bad pick?
No, the Rams are one of my favorite teams to make it all the way to. But that NFC West is brutal. They got to go against three very good teams in order to – and they made – with the NFL switching to 17 for the playoffs, they very well may get at least three teams in the playoffs this year. That's how tough that division is. If they can make it through that gauntlet, I'm right with you. The Rams can make it. But I do think the NFC representative is coming out of the NFC West. And the AFC is a whole different ballgame because we saw that the Bills could be handled with Pittsburgh, but they got a quarterback and a wide receiver tandem that's probably the best in the league right now. And then you have Kansas City, of course.
Yeah.
So if I had to put my money on anybody, I would never, ever, 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 ever say the Browns are going to the Super Bowl. It's just my Pittsburgh Steelers blood won't let me. But that seems to be a popular thing with everybody as the Browns. If I had to make my pick, it would be Kansas City and the Rams.
There we go. Trey, always appreciate you having time to talk to us, and I hope we get a chance to talk to you again. Great stuff today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. That's Trey Essex joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Played the majority of his career with the Steelers. Now, he did have a final year with Indianapolis, but that was just about the time he was hanging up the cleats. Big fella. Started as a high school tight end, where he was a tough guy to handle when he was with the Harding Hawks, and then went to Northwestern, where he converted to an offensive lineman and eventually did such a great job at Northwestern that he was picked up by the Pittsburgh Steelers and spent, I think, about six, maybe seven seasons in Pittsburgh. And so he played his entire career with Ben Roethlisberger. So when he says, Ben's my man, Ben's my quarterback, he's not kidding. Ben was the quarterback and the only quarterback that there was a signal caller in Pittsburgh during Trey Essex's career. Coming up, we've got high school football picks of the week. That'll come up about 5:08, and then Tommy Schegler, he'll make his high school football picks as well at 5:35. Busy Thursday edition of the Sports Rush here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. In case you missed it earlier, the Chicago White Sox are the official champions of the American League Central. They were winners earlier today over the Cleveland Indians, 7-2 in a seven-inning game, and that locks it up for the Chicago White Sox. They will play another game coming up just after 6 o'clock. We will join that game in progress at 7 o'clock right after Justin Kenny and the High School Football Coaches Show. Still coming up here on the Sports Rush for you Thursday afternoon. What game, and there's quite a few of them to look at, is going to be the upset alert for the NFL in Week 3? Also, we'll give you the Colts injury update from what we learned at practice today and the High School Football Picks of the Week presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic. It's all coming up within the next 20 minutes. Plus, we're going to give you a chance to win. We've got two tickets to go see Pat Benatar. She'll be with her husband, Neil Giraldo, at the Hobart Arena in Troy, Ohio, coming up 1 week from tonight. We've got two tickets we'll give away somewhere in the 5 o'clock hour, so don't go away. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.